Hi, everyone. We're called Twin Forks, and this is a song of ours called Kiss Me, Darling.
Kiss me, darling. It's been a long time. Kiss me, darling. It's been a long time. It's been a long time since I saw you in the village playing mandolin. Something in your singing made my burdens lift. Hanging on to every word to cross your lips. Yeah. Seems like a long way gone. I can still remember how you sang that song. Smelling like nobody did.
That's Kiss Me, Darling by Twin Forks, our guest this evening on WUWM at Night. Before anything, can we put some voices and instruments to names?
Sure. I don't know who goes first. How about you? Ladies first.
I'm Kelsey Barron, and I play the mandolin.
And sing.
And sing.
Hi, I'm Sarah Bost, and I sing.
Hey, Jonathan Clark, bass and vocals.
This is Sean Zorn. I play drums and percussion.
And he says, yeah, a lot. And then... My name's Chris, and I play guitar and sing.
And to give listeners some context, Chris, you were the front man of Dashboard Confessional for over a decade. And for someone that could be touring in a bus and headlining shows, you're back in the van opening shows.
Yes.
Does it feel at all like starting over?
Yeah, it is starting over. So it does feel that way. and that's exactly why we've decided to do it. I think collectively, if I could speak for Dashboard, and of course, as you know, one of our members lives here and is from Milwaukee, Scott Shainbeck. We all felt a bit burned out after some time, and for fear of getting to the point of phoning it in, we decided to step back before we got to that place. And in the interim, we all started other bands or started doing other things. And I began playing with some friends and family from home. And I had to decide whether to trade on the name and the work we'd done with Dashboard or to, I guess, really start from the bottom. And that just seemed like the more stand-up thing to do somehow, not try to fool the fan base that we had from that we'd earned through being dedicated to them in Dashboard. And just kind of say, oh, well, here's this other thing I do. It's kind of like Dashboard, but not. It isn't Dashboard. So I didn't. It just felt a little like false advertising. And also, we believe in the music, and we think that it will earn its own audience. It may be the same audience. May well be the same exact audience. Maybe not. But we do want to come by it honest.
Changing the name gives you a new identity and a sense of freedom, I'm sure.
I couldn't have just called it Dashboard. It's not Dashboard. It doesn't have Scott. It doesn't have John. It doesn't have this. We're not playing, for the most part, playing those songs. And it is its own thing. It is its own identity, as you said. We've been touring quite a bit since mm-hmm. we released this record, and there's really no end in sight. And that's kind of the only way I know how to yeah. be in a band.
And it's,
I'm sure there's other ways that make better sense to, but I haven't figured it out.
And it's not your first rodeo with opening up shows. Didn't Dashboard tour with like U2 and Bon Jovi?
Yeah, and also in the early days, you know, when it was just me and a guitar, I played almost exclusively with like heavy hardcore bands. So I kind of run the gambit of, I'll play anywhere, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, put a if you can find me a room, I'll go play in it.
Yeah. As we've done here.
Yeah, here we are.
And whether it's fair or not, I think Dashboard was pigeonholed as sort of, you know, having these melancholy relationship narratives. And in a way, Twin Forks seems to be Dashboard's happy older brother, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if it was unfair to be categorized that way, but I don't know what the percentage was. I'm talking about Dashboard now versus like happy songs to sad songs. There are plenty of happy songs.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the popular ones were less happy. So I'm just kind of kidding. I think our two biggest songs that we ever had, or three, were really kind of effusive. But, you know, we were part of the emo scene that was kind of vibrant in the 2000s. And I think as a blanket statement, it was thought of as a somber scene. Unless, of course, you went to the shows and then you realized mm-hmm. it was just euphoric and celebratory and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But this does give us license to look at life through a different lens and filter that down into our songs and have those that reflect a whole different side of your personality.
To take a line from an old folk song, I have to ask, does it take a worried man to sing a worried song?
I think it takes a worried man to sing a worried song, yeah.
And that's where you were at?
Well,
a decade
I think
ago.
That's where everybody's at a little bit all the time. But most people that I know, specifically songwriters and artists of varying mediums, aren't really like exclusively happy or exclusively sad, or most people aren't. You know, you just have periods of moments of time. And if you just happen to have a guitar in your hand when you feel down for a second, maybe you'll write a song that's down,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa if you're feeling happy. Now, on the other hand, like a lot of it just has to do with what the chords sound like when you just start noodling. You see, you know, you play music, you just sit down. You don't know what's going to come out of your hands, and you have to react to whatever like sense memory that brings you to. Oh, there's mm-hmm. a story that feels like this from my life, and I can write to that.
I would imagine it may be easier, though, seeing yourself singing these songs in 10 years than, like you said, phoning it in with Dashboard in 10 years.
I have no way to tell you the answer to that. It might be completely – the song may have a completely different – most likely will have a completely different meaning to me by then, as songs I've written 10 years ago have to me now. But I think it's likely that I will be doing Dashboard then, so we should talk in 10 years and I'll tell you. But the idea is to be able to do both bands.
Mm-hmm.
They're both things that we all – collectively, the two bands, we all enjoy playing, and we enjoy playing shows together too, which we do when we can.
I guess I was just getting at this idea of, you know, art not existing in a vacuum, and you know,
it's
these songs having
true.
More of a timeless feel to them than perhaps some of the Dashboard
right.
material.
Well, yeah, I guess that, you know, that's true. I think that it's more readily tied to who people thought I was by the collection of songs to that period.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, like I said, I don't think I was not like a sad sack sitting around on the couch not leaving my house. It just, I had a perfectly fine outlet for if I felt a little down.
Mm-hmm.
Just write a song about it and go out and have fun with my friends afterwards, you know. But I wonder if when we do those shows 10 years from now, Dashboard shows, if you're right, maybe we'll lean on the portion of them that maybe are related to this band a little more, like
mm-hmm.
the word what you said about this band, which are there's a more timeless quality in that they're not so mired in a specific emotional state of mind either way. Although I do think that this band is is a sort of state of mind of happiness or joy or something, mm-hmm. whether even if the song – sometimes the lyrics are melancholy, but the music is happy, and sometimes the music is melancholy and the lyrics are happy. I like that juxtaposition.
Well, how about another song?
How about one? This might be the happiest song ever written in the world by us. Who's going to start this song?
Why don't you do it?
Okay. Cousin Sean says I start the song.
Cross My Mind by our guest tonight at WUWM Twin Forks. Do you remember where you were when you wrote that song, Chris?
Yeah, I wrote that song with a good friend of mine goes by the name of Robopop. He's a producer for like Lana Del Rey and writes songs for Maroon 5 and all this stuff. And we were messing around. We had this idea for a song for somebody I won't say who. And I co-write for a lot of people with a lot of people, so does Jonathan. And I kind of broke the golden rule when we had this song, and it was – I don't even know how far into the song we were, but I knew it right – maybe from the first note. And I didn't say a word till it was done, and then I was like, all right, pal. I really need this one. I really just have to keep this one. And he was all for it. You know, there's something flattering about that too when somebody decides they like it enough, they need to keep it. And so and we have written together a lot since, so you know, I didn't burn the bridge there. But yeah, we were in New York, and it was summertime, and just kind of like walking around Washington Square Park in that area and messing with melodies and got back to where we were writing, and it just kind of all came out kind of at once, really.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of New York, there's a great lyric about hearing mandolin in the village mm-hmm. on one of the songs on the album, and then there's another one about singing lead and she takes harmony in another, and it's really cool how, you know, the lyrics are self-referential in a way of the new musical direction you're taking. And I was wondering if you're conscious of that.
From time to time I am, yeah. Sorry. Sorry about that.
Pun intended.
It's low-hanging fruit there. But anyway, I know what I'm doing. So, and then I choose whether it's foolish or not, you know. But I do think I did want to write about, you know, I spent a good period of my life living in Manhattan. It will definitely help you to grow as a musician to live in a place like that, as we do now in Nashville. And I've always liked to write sort of reference both musical and geographical places that were influential to me, especially when they combined into one. And, yeah, I wanted to have something that put the stamp on who we are and what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Music about music, yeah. As strange as that seems.
Jazz plus jazz equals jazz.
And on that last song, there was a nice back and forth between the male and female vocal, and it reminded me of John Prine's In Spite of Ourselves. Mm-hmm. I wonder if him or any of those 70s singer-songwriters like Guy Clark, Townes Van Zandt had much influence on this project.
Well, you've nailed like three of them in a row, you know, that had, as a matter of fact, you can find covers of those artists that we did running up to figuring out exactly what kind of songs we were going to have or what kind of band we were going to be, you know, exactly. So John Prine, Guy Clark, Townes, those are all on my, I guess it was a solo record really. I guess it wasn't really a solo record, but we weren't committed as a band yet. So we called it a solo, we called it Chris Grava, but we were all on it. And we covered those among others. And those artists meant a lot to me growing up, and they mean a lot to me now, but they were probably add Steve Earle to the list and many more.
Don't you guys do a Galway Girl cover?
Yeah, kind of every week try pretty much cover a song from everyone that guided us to this band. We haven't finished this, but that's kind of our goal. So a lot of this is a lot of what the band is a result of a challenge John gave me while we were making that covers record. We would sit outside the garage where we recorded and pass around a guitar, you know, once we were having a break. And, you know, somebody would play one song. It gets to my turn. I don't know. We can never remember what song it was. But say it was a Townes Van Zandt song. And I'm playing the song and John put his hand on the strings like this and which is right in the middle of the song, which is like made me think there was like an alligator behind me or something. Is this when we were still in Florida?
It better be.
and then he said, Chris, why are you afraid to do what you love? And that was a big challenge to me because I thought I'd made some choices in my career that proved that I was not afraid to do what I love in spite of criticism I guess I had held back on one thing. I kept one thing sacred, and that's that music I really came up with in the very beginning of my education as a music fan, Fleetwood Mac, Paul Simon, Townes Van Zandt, Steve Earle, John Prine. They were just records in my house. And I didn't want to I felt like, well, I'll never measure up to that. I've got to do something completely different. But somewhere along the line, I realized, well, I've become a good enough player and singer and storyteller that I don't know that I'll ever measure up to that, but I have something of my own to offer to that. And that was as I got to thinking that through because of John's simple challenge there.
Picking songs with John and hanging out and just working on songs in this very organic and natural way is probably a lot different than, say, recording a song for the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack.
Yeah, I would say it's the polar opposite of that, yeah. There's no one paying attention. There's no notes at the end of the day. You write the song for the – I mean, maybe you've picked one that isn't the greatest example because that Vindicated just kind of came out mm-hmm. as spur of the moment. Almost – I think all we ever changed by the time we got in the studio, it was one chord. It was just a song. Once in a while, you get that lucky where it just kind of comes out. Mm-hmm. I hear people say you're a conduit for it. Maybe that's true, or maybe you're thinking about it and processing it in the back of your head in some place you don't really understand until it's finished, and then it comes out seemingly all finished. But to do it without the prying eyes of any – or without expectation is a strange thing to get again in your career when you've been in the limelight for a while. You kind of generally would get that on your first record and never again. Mm-hmm. First record, nobody – who are you? No one's paying attention to you. Then they hear it and then they have expectations of what you should be or will be or when you'll have a record out and so on. And we were back in that place where it was pure – the joy of doing it. Like, you know, let's do this song. I mean, we'd go on tangents of doing a song that had no hope of being a song that anybody would want to hear. But it was sure fun to do it, you know.
But being free of the politics and pressures of major labels is a really led to Twin Forks in a way.
I would say some of the inception of Twin Forks was reactionary to the demands. And I mean, there's always pressure. I put pressure on myself. I'm sure you do too. Everyone does that if you're a professional. But there's a thing in the world of the major labels that it's rarer when it doesn't happen. Sometimes it doesn't happen. But most of the time, I'm not sure the person that's directing your career in that building really gives a whatever about it until it is a smash. And then they're like, I knew the whole time. I did all the work. I did all the heavy lifting. Most of the time, they're just maybe irritating you a little bit and mm-hmm. kind of like – throwing in notes for the sake of like, well, see, I helped you. And then fighting with you over things that don't need fighting and all that stuff is silliness if you ask me. It's like, well, I mean, I'll do it again. I'm happy to do it again, man. I'll give it the old college try again and again. But do you have any idea which band we are? That's kind of how it is on the major label for the most part. Luckily, though, we had somebody in that building that was pretty high up that really understood who we were and gave us a long leash. This is Dashboard I'm talking about now. Gave us a pretty long leash. But there's no leash for this band, and it's incredibly liberating.
And you seem happy, and we're happy that you guys could stop by today and you could do one more song.
Yeah, we would love to do it more. So we'll do this song. It's called Back to You, in hopes that you'll invite us back here.
One, two, three, hey! I was young, so I forgot which was my place and which was not. Thought I had a good shot. I took it running my took ahead, look behind, take another on my the graveyard, even the dead deserve a song. Let the moon do what she does.
Huh, what?
She don't need to make a fuss. She don't know where she shines for us. But something tells me that she does.
Yeah.
My lonely side. I follow sign. I know they want. I trust the signs.